First Baptist Church of Redmond, April 15th, 2012. Special guest speaker, Chuck Amos. God's Perspective.
Please stand. A reading from Psalms 136, verse 1. Oh, give thanks to the Lord, for he is good, for his mercy endures forever. Be seated.
Okay, guys, how are you doing? Good. I am glad. I am so glad. And I'm very glad to be here, too. I want to thank you all for allowing me to come again. I know you didn't have much of a choice because the pastor just asked me to come without even checking with you guys. So, but I do appreciate that very much. Let me tell you real quick. Since the sun was out and the grass wasn't wet or anything like that, I actually decided that yesterday was the day I would clean up my yard. And a few of you have yards, and you probably have an idea of what the yards look like after a good winter with hailstorm, snow, and ice storms, and all kinds of weather like that. Things just pile up and make it a mess. So I was out there mowing things, just kind of getting in the groove of the spring and all that sort of thing, and then my phone rings. And it's Pastor Johnston, of course, and he said that he'd been delaying and agonizing because he really wanted to be here this morning, but he didn't feel like he could because he had a cold and he was having a hard time breathing, and he said, I may have cracked a rib. Oh, heavens! And then he told me the story about it. I coughed real hard, and it was either bruised or cracked or just maybe even dislocated or something. Don't know. But he didn't think he could do this morning. And he was agonizing over the whole thing. So he does love you, even though he's not here. Okay. But he said, could you come and speak? And I just said yes. Didn't even think about it. Said yes. And then after I said that, I got off the phone and I said, Lord, what did I do? I said, yes. What? Normally I have a little bit more time unless it's for a kids program, and then I've got all kinds of things in the box. What should I share on the Sunday after Easter when a lot of times church numbers are low but people are expecting certain things? What can I share that you would have for this marvelous group over in Redmond? And so he gave me something. But I have to warn you, too. There's a famous story about Winston Churchill. You guys know Winston Churchill, right? Right, okay. It's amazing the number of people who don't anymore. So Winston Churchill, he was asked to come and speak for a group. And he said, well, how much time do you want? It's just 15 minutes. You're famous. It'll be a great drawing card. It's for a charity. We'd like you to come and speak for about 15 minutes at this charity event. He said, fine, I can do that. When is it? They said, next week. I said, oh, no. I said, no, I can't do it. I said, no, you just said you could. What do you mean you can't come and speak? Just 15 minutes, that's all, just 15 minutes. And he said, no. If you want me to come and speak for 15 minutes, you have to give me a month to prepare. If you want me to come and speak for 2 hours, I'll be there tomorrow. Because he was a wordsmith. He was a skilled orator. And so speaking was easy for him. But saying what he needed to say in a short amount of time was a challenge. So just to let you know, between God and myself, God is a lot more organized than I am. So what I have to share probably won't take 2 hours, okay? Hopefully, we'll be out of here right about noon, okay? So nobody will be chomping at the bit trying to hit the road. Unfortunately, as we were going through the service, I saw the little quotation on prayer, and I just needed to say one thing about that, because it starts out, more things are wrought by prayer. And a lot of people don't know what wrought means. Okay, it's not things decomposing in the corner, which would throw that whole statement really into a cattywampus situation. You know, more things rot in prayer than perhaps that's true in some people. But the word rot in that case has to do with blacksmithing and the process of working iron. How many of you have ever seen a wrought iron fence or a wrought iron thing? Yeah, it's a skilled thing. A blacksmith would take the steel, heat it up, and pound it, and stretch it, and turn it, and twist it, and manipulate it in all kinds of different ways, and work very hard in the process to create this beautiful artistic piece. So that's when something is wrought by prayer, it is pounded, worked out, and made into something absolutely marvelous. So just an encouragement there. As you take time each Sunday to pray for people, as you take time through the week to go through that prayer list in the back of your bulletin, what you pound out with God in that process will make something beautiful here in Redmond and in the world. So, anyway, beyond that, I got a question for you. I want you to think for a moment and just an instantaneous response from you, okay? Just, if you think it, blurt it out. I'm going to say something to you, and as soon as you hear it, don't be afraid. Nobody's going to stare at you. Well, maybe they will. But don't let that stand in the way. As soon as I say this, blurt out what comes to mind first thing, all right? Chocolate chip and mint. Okay, what was that?
Seagull.
And over here? Cookies and ice cream. Okay, okay. Cookies, seagulls, ice cream. Yeah, okay, all right. All of these things come to mind. Seagulls, that's unique. But yes, all these things come to mind. But what if I'm just talking about chocolate chips and mint? And I don't mean anything more by it. If I was out in the hall, okay, guys, everybody, come out in the parking lot. I've got chocolate chips and mint for you. And you run out there, some people think cookies, ice cream, seagulls. But that's cool. And you go running out there, and all there is some chocolate chips and some mint leaves. You go, not really what I was expecting. That's because that's what our perception is. It's not what we've seen. It's not what we know as a fact, it's what we perceive is coming up. It's amazing. Each of us has been given a perception of eternity. Okay? And what we understand now as what eternity looks like for us, what is heaven really like, you know? When you're a kid, heaven is candy and ice cream and cookies and seagulls for as long and as far as the eye can see. Heaven! Yes, well, you get a little older, you have a root canal, maybe those sweets are not really your perspective of heaven. What we see changes with time. What we envision eternity is like changes as our perception of the world, as our perception of life here on earth changes and adjusts. Last weekend, we celebrated a couple of things. We celebrated Easter, okay? And Easter has roots and transitions and modifications throughout history, okay? The actual word comes from one source. The actual celebration is a conversion of pagan holidays like Christmas and other things. That happens. And that is marvelous that we, as God's people, can take what people are used to experiencing and claim it for Christ. And it doesn't matter, really, to me much. I get concerned. If you get angry with me because I'm saying I like Easter, I like Christmas, because your perception of what those holidays are more in one direction than others, I'm sorry. Don't mean to offend. But I like them because they're fun, and it gives me a chance to share about my perspective on who God is and what Christ came for. When Jesus died, his disciples believed that was it. Peter was in fear for his life because he thought he was next. He thought that the Romans were going to come and round up everybody that had anything to do with Jesus because they'd done it before. And they were experts at taking the population and getting things under control. All right? They just make it happen. So when the disciples are meeting in the upper room and saying, oh, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? You know, it's here we are. Jesus gave us some great news. He gave us a perspective that is fantastic. But what are we going to do with it? What's going to happen? Jesus met with some of the disciples down at the beach. Said, hey, what you guys doing? Oh, we're going back to fishing because, you know, Jesus is gone. Hey, whoa! It's Jesus! Whoa! And Peter gets excited once again and goes over and above. Thomas sees Jesus and says, wait a minute. I'm not sure. Is that really you? Because his perspective was different from Peter, from James, from John, from the others. And so it got put in the book. And Jesus said, look, nails in the hands, hole in the side, it's me. We can be on the same page. We can have the same perspective on this. As I was working in the yard, and by the way, my lawn looks beautiful, especially when the sun shines. But it was fun, it was meditative, and it's neat. My perspective on yard work has changed over the years. When I was a teenager, it was not a good thing. Now, it's marvelous. I think part of it is because I cannot hear the phone ring. So, anyway, so I was out there mowing, and these three kids come walking by on the sidewalk, and they're talking. And one of them, in a low voice, is talking to the other two about God. And, you know, because, well, Easter just happened, right? So God's kind of a topic of conversation, a lot of things. And one of them is speaking kind of low tones and conversationally and you know, not really trying to make a big deal, just talking to the other two about God. And one of the boys says, what, God? How can you believe in God? I mean, you can't see him. There's no evidence of him. That's silly to believe in God when there's no absolute proof. And I thought, okay, I can say something, but God has that process working out. You don't get that emotional, that energetic about being against God unless God's working on you. So I thought, okay, God's bringing more people into his life, and oh boy. That'll be an interesting story one day. But then I thought, you know, that is not a matter of physical evidence when we start our walk with Christ. He begins to change our perspective so we can see God in the world around us in so many marvelous ways. And that kid didn't have that perspective. What he needed to do was get a grip on faith, because what he was doing was putting his faith in a theory that says at some point the genetic code in each living creature started to get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and increase and increase and fell. Finally, it reached the top of the evolutionary scale, which is us, with the most complex DNA of any species on the earth. And that. Now, he's putting his faith in that because there is no proof that that could ever happen. Scientists keep trying to prove that it can, but they can't add stuff to the basic building blocks that God created on the earth for life. Doesn't happen. People have perspectives on Easter that are chocolate bunnies, or just chocolate, or just candy, or just eggs. And other people have perspectives that have to do with eternity. And, okay, quick little background. I'm trying to keep from going 2 hours. Quick little background. I get to go to a lot of different denominations, a lot of different churches. Last Sunday, I was at a Four Square church up in Everett. I have a friend who known for years. She's in charge of the children's program. And this particular church, on Easter, they have a Saturday evening service. That's the complete Easter program, because they also have baptisms on Easter. And then on Easter Sunday morning, instead of their usual four services, they have five services. And it was packed. But last couple of years, I've been invited there. I've been to some Chinese churches on Easter. I've been to some Assembly of God churches on Easter. I've been to Episcopalian, all kinds of different denominations. It's amazing, some Catholic churches. But this was, this is where I was. And it was great. And what happened there was amazing. I've got a little story to share with you. I'm going to end up reading it to you because I didn't have time to memorize every little bit. But let me go back real quick on Easter. It was also Passover. And I have several Messianic friends who, they're being a Messianic Jew, they believe in Yeshua. They believe that Yeshua is the Messiah. And you've got to be careful you don't say Yahshua, you say Yeshua. Because Yahshua is Joshua and Yeshua is Jesus. And if you slip up, they will remind you. It's it's a very particular, exacting language and verbiage. Anyway, whenever I go there, I have to keep up on what happens with the Jewish celebrations. And the my go-to source is a place on the web called Judaism 101. Check it out if you want to learn more about the basics of Judaism. And I was thinking, okay, now we're coming to Passover, we're coming to Easter, and we're talking about death and destruction of the old world and God bringing a new world into existence. Well, what is the Jewish perspective on what that is? Because we all have a perception of heaven, what heaven is. Well, what do the Jewish people believe it is? So off of Judaism 101, Gan Eden and Gehenna. Okay? Gan Eden is the Garden of Eden, okay? But it's not exactly. It's a place of spiritual reward for the righteousness which is often referred to as Gan Eden. Garden of Eden, but it's not the same place as where Adam and Eve are. It's a new Eden. It's a new place. It's a recreated garden where God's presence is, and people have everything that they could ever need and a direct relationship. And it's spiritual perfection. It's kind of like the what one might experience on the Sabbath. the celebration of the Sabbath that is 60 times greater than the best worship service you have ever been in. Okay? Think back real quick. The best, most awesome worship service you were ever in, times 60. And that's every moment in heaven. That's their perspective. And as far as, of course, the other end of it is Gehenna, which is hell. This is our perception of heaven, hell. Now, this is what the first century people knew. This is what Jesus' disciples, what the people Jesus was talking about, what their concept was. So when Jesus was talking about heaven, they were thinking this place of absolute spiritual perfection. And some people thought you could work your way there. And Jesus was saying, no, that's not, you cannot work hard enough to get there. No matter how many times you build a church, it don't matter. The nails will rust and the wood will rot. It'll all go away. What matters is accepting God's gift of salvation. The gift I'm bringing to you. The gift that costs blood. So the opposite would be Gehenna, hell, the place of fire. Okay, I was at a place where someone described this as they described it as what it was described to him in when he went to Jerusalem one year. He asked, "What do you see as Gehenna?" And outside Jerusalem, there used to be this big pit, this big fire pit where the trash went. Anything that would burn would go there. Anything that was diseased would go there. Anything that was corrupted would go there, and it would just burn. And the more the population grew, the more trash was left, and they would burn it. And they had people who would collect the trash, and they were unclean, and the unclean people would haul the unclean trash out. This is food, anything you would throw into the garbage, a lot of the stuff you throw into the recycling bin, it would all go there. They'd take it out, and the unclean people would take the unclean stuff and throw it into the unclean place, and it would be burning, and it would be hideous, and it would smell nasty. And if one of those people fell in, they were done. There was no way to get them out. Because once they slipped in, that was it. They didn't have a rescue squad. They didn't have anybody to help them out. So that was their perspective. And the Jewish perspective of Gehenna at that time was that if you died and you didn't go directly into the garden, you went into this place. And you would be tormented by demons of your own creation. So all the things that you did, all the things that were wrong, all the things that you knew you shouldn't have done would torment you until it was all worked out. And you were there from a short time to up to a year. And then after a year, if you were properly purified, then you could go to the garden. And if you were not, then some say that your spirit would be utterly destroyed and you would cease to exist. Others would say that you would continue to exist, but you would go to this beautiful place of God's blessing and have this burden of regret for all eternity that you would carry around. So these are some of the concepts. And that is what they thought of eternity. And another thing was that eventually they thought that God would restore the garden to the earth. So we would experience that here on earth. And it would be a marvelous thing. so that we wouldn't even have to bother with going through the day-to-day strife that we do now. Okay? So, that's perceptions, perspectives. And I'm moving kind of quick because I want to make sure that I hit all the highlights and get to where we need to go. Let me share this real quick. Last Sunday, like I said, I was at Foursquare Church, and after I did Sunday night, and then there were two services in the morning, and then that I had finished, and you know, I go in and do about 10, 15 minutes, and then I go out. Okay, so I being with the kids, 900% energy, and then boom, go outside and go, you know, little marathon sprints kind of thing. So I'm out in the hallway, and I thought, okay, Lord, here, get some stretch, get some rest, refocus. I got to restart the story. I got to make sure to hit on time, because when you have a big church, everybody's got to be right on time. And this little kid and his family come in. They're running a little bit behind schedule. They're not quite there. I'd finished the one service. I'd gotten my coffee. I'd come back. I was waiting. It was another 20 minutes before I was supposed to be in. They were going into the service. And this one little boy, he was just not there. He did not want to be there. I thought, hey, you know, that's okay. I've done this 1,000 times. So I get down, and I've got one of my puppets, my dog, Maynard. Some of you may have seen him. And I sit, get down low, and I talk to him face to face, and I say, hey, what's going on? Did you want to come in with the kids, or did you want to go? I'll tell you what. If you want to come in with the kids, you can meet Maynard. And I brought Maynard out, and Maynard and he talked, and then put Maynard down. And, no, I'm going to go in with my parents. Okay, and away he goes. And I went back and did not think another thing about it. So a couple days ago, I get an email. And I see it's my friend from the church, the director of the children's program. I go, uh-oh, I normally don't hear back this quick. What did I do? Because a lot of times our perception is that if somebody contacts us in authority, we did something we shouldn't have. But I know her. She usually is pretty nice about that. Even when I don't do as well, she's very happy. She sent me a thank you, and then she said, I need to give you this. This is what I just got in my inbox. She said, hello, Chuck. We haven't met, but I had the amazing opportunity to watch you love a child this past Easter. Read that and go, what? Which one? I was ushering at the balcony door last Sunday for one of the more packed services. Worship had already begun, and it was powerful. I was listening and singing along as I greeted people coming in to be seated. We were probably 5 to 6 minutes into the worship when I noticed a family coming toward me to enter the service. They had a young boy with them who was very reluctant and not happy. Then I saw a gentleman with a blazer coming towards him, my coat, carrying what looked like a picnic basket. He stopped and softly spoke to the mother and grandmother, and then, with tenderness, stooped down to speak to the little boy. He remained very rigid and determined, but slowly succumbed to this very interesting man with a basket. Then this cute little dog, puppet, came out of the basket and began to talk to the little boy. It was beautiful to watch. This little boy began to soften and warm up, and I could see him step closer to this talking puppy. I also noticed the family watch their son's reaction, and they too seemed to be touched. I was smacked in between this incredible dichotomy, having multiple worship arts volunteers on my left, serving God with their gifts and lifting up worship to Jesus. And on my right, this one man, tenderly and lovingly, worshiping God with his gift to this one little child. It brought me to tears. When we're serving many or one, God's love is equally demonstrated and shown through our worship to Him. It also reminded me of what Jesus could have done, would have done. Thank you for your obedience to Christ. Thank you for using your gifts He has given you to glorify, to the glory of God. I caught you walking out our core values. Everyone honors, grows, shares, gives, and loves. May the Lord bless you and keep you, serving alongside you. Rhoda. So, I'm not sharing that to try and build up my place. I'm sharing that to let you know that everything you do, there are eyes watching you. And their perception, when you are serving God, their perception is what God wants them to see and what they need to see. And that's amazing. We don't know how many lives we touch as we walk. So I'm going to move quickly here. What are the perceptions of yourself? How do you see others? At work or in your retirement, you know, when you go to get a coffee or something, what is your perception of those who are around you and what they're doing? At home, I know this gentleman. Now, knowing Pastor Johnston, I know that many of you are probably familiar with Star Wars. Okay? And the character Jabba the Hutt. All right? We were ministering with a lady yesterday whose husband, he has a perception of himself as Jabba the Hutt. And those around him see him as Jabba the Hutt. He has many issues, including physical similarities to Jabba the Hutt. But his perspective of Jabba the Hutt would be the master of his domain. All he need do is be present, and those around him will do as he commands. Life is good, life is beautiful. How many people are blessed by my mere presence? You may get an idea of what the issues his wife had. Okay? Because she did not want to have the other perspective, but many people have the perspective and perception of him, and we've tried to help stop that, but sometimes you can't intervene. They have the perception of Jabba the Hutt as this really big thing that is mean to everybody around him and doesn't do much. And, well, you can go on from there wherever you want. Whatever is good for Jabba is bad for everyone who's around him. And that's something that we've been working with him and praying for him about, and God's still making that happen. But these are the perceptions. He's got the same core perception, but the perspective is completely different. What is the perception that you have of yourself and the perception that others have of you? I know when I look in the mirror, who I see is not who I remember seeing 30 years ago. And what I think of myself is not what others think of me. But the big question is, what does God see? And that's where I needed to get to before we scampered home or off to the rest of our Sunday activities. Now, this is from the New Living Translation. I also have the version in the New King James Version because sometimes when I'm reading, my tongue goes wild, wraps itself around my eye tooth, and I can't see what I'm saying. So it gets a little hard. So New King James has really helped out. But the New Living Translation kind of puts things in perspective too. Matthew 6:26. See if I can get my finger on it. In the Bible I have, it says, "Do not worry." In Matthew 25, okay, back up. Matthew 6:25. "Therefore I say to you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or what you will drink, nor about your body, what you will put on. Is not life more than food, and more than body, and more than clothing? Look at the birds. The birds of the air. For they neither sow nor reap, nor gather into barns. Yet our Heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not of more value than they are?" Look at the birds. They don't plant or harvest or store up food in barns, for your Heavenly Father takes care of them. And aren't you far more valuable than they are? Like that. Matthew 10, 28 through 30. "And do not fear those who kill the body, but cannot kill the soul, but rather fear him who is able to destroy both soul and body in hell." Remember that perspective on hell? This is a complete elimination of existence. "Are not two sparrows sold for a copper coin, and not one of them falls to the ground apart from the Father's will, but the very hairs on your head are all numbered. Do not fear, therefore. You are of more value than many sparrows." New Living Translation: "Don't be afraid of those who want to kill your body. They can't touch your soul. Fear only God, who can destroy both body and soul in hell. What's the price of two sparrows? One copper coin. But not a single sparrow can fall to the ground without your Father knowing it. And the very hairs on your head are all numbered. So don't be afraid. You are more valuable to God than a whole flock of sparrows." That's God's perspective on you, on me, on all of us. Get God's perspective. We just celebrated not a death, not a destruction, but we celebrated a rebirth, a recreation, a new Eden being introduced into the world. God's total love and commitment to all of us. Can you see the picture? You got the picture? Jesus died because he loves us. He lives because he loves us even more. God has numbered. He doesn't let a sparrow fall from the sky without knowing about it. He knows every head. He knows, and every hair on those heads. He knows every hair that has fallen from my head and hit the ground, and he is aware of all the things, and his perspective on me is greater and better than I could ever have. In God's eyes, I'm incredible, because what that lady wrote was awesome. If my name wasn't on it, I'd say, "Hey, that's a really cool guy." But my perspective was, "Man, I'm kind of tired. Oh, man, we can't let that little kid go into church and cause a ruckus. Lord, help me to just change his attitude a little bit. We can pump him up. And maybe he'll go in with the kids and let his parents go in and worship on their own. But no, they went in there with him, and what happened in the hallway became part of the worship experience for them. They saw God's perspective. They got to experience God's perspective. And so as you go out this week, try that new vision. Try those glasses that let you see the world from God's perspective. Let you see the people around you and the things around you from God's perspective. Think you can do that? Can you? And if you're having trouble with that, let's pray. Because through prayer, we can pound it out, twist it up, and maybe even make something beautiful. Might take a little heat. Might take a little effort. But amazing things are wrought with prayer. Okay. So let's go ahead and close. Lord, I thank you that you bailed me out and gave me a message that to share that I was excited about. And Lord, I ask that whatever perspective people came here with, or perception that people came here with, that your grace will just let it bear fruit in every life here. Thank you for the opportunity. And thank you for these committed, loving, caring people who you've brought together to share their time and their worship and their love for you with one another. Thank you, and commit this day to you in Jesus' precious name.